Stefan, you've just been honored by being given the title of Distinguished Scientist at the Alberta Research Council. What does that mean to you? What does it actually mean, being a distinguished scientist?
Well, I don't know what it means from an organizational point of view. For me, it means that my years of hard work and also my ideas and my contribution to this new field of endeavor have been recognized, and that gives me great satisfaction seeing that I get this recognition.
Well, you've been focusing your research on carbon dioxide. You were recognized as part of the group with the Nobel Prize dealing with carbon capture and storage as one of the issues dealing with how we can deal with climate change. Tell me a little bit about what it is that you've been working on in this area.
If we believe that humans are responsible for accelerated climate change, actually warming, because climate changed all the time through time. But if we believe that we are responsible for that and that indeed the climate is warming, we as humans can and should take two lines of action. One is adaptation to the change, and we have to do that. And the other one is try to mitigate the magnitude of the change. And in that respect, of course, there are all kinds of measures and visions for reducing carbon dioxide emissions and a few other gases that are greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. And there is no single bullet to do that. There are a number of various mechanism or activities. Of course, everybody talks about energy efficiency and about conservation of energy and about switching from fossil fuels to other forms of energy. But the reality is that the world population is increasing and everybody needs energy, because only energy is helping us to raise our standard of living. How we produce our energy, it's a different issue. But not only that fossil fuels are the cheapest and most abundant so far, the others are quite expensive, unreliable, intermittent, and we need quite significant technological advances to be able to implement them on such a scale to make a difference. And that will take us towards the end of the century. Within the portfolio of mitigation measures, carbon capture and storage has been recognized as being one that it's a near to medium term. That's why people are talking about 2050 as opposed to 2100. That can be technologically applied even tomorrow, in the sense that we know how to do it. We know how to do it because not only that it has been practiced in a few places in the world on purpose, but it has been practiced in other industries or similar in other industries. The issue with carbon capture and storage is that, nevertheless, it has not been practiced on the extremely large scale that needs to be implemented, and it has not been integrated in the large systems that need to be put in place. Because you have to understand that this carbon capture and storage has three major components. One is carbon dioxide capture from an emitter, a power plant, or a gas plant, or a refinery, or a cement plant, a steel plant, and so on. This is a process issue, a chemical process or a physical process issue. Today, we know how to do that in using particularly amines and other chemical processes, but it's extremely costly. And here, the research is to bring the cost down and so on. The second component is transportation. Today, it's by pipeline on land. And again, as an example that we know how to do it, in the United States, there are more than 5,000 kilometers of CO2 pipelines that take CO2 to enhanced oil recovery operations. Obviously, we know how to do it. It's being practiced. The longest pipeline is 870 kilometers long. The third component of this carbon capture and storage is the storage part. Basically, taking the carbon dioxide and injecting it deep into the ground in strata where it will stay there for thousands to hopefully millions of years, because there are barriers to its movement to the surface, in the same way as in the past we had oil and gas accumulations that now we are producing. I used to use this analogy when talking to students, for example, petroleum engineering and geologists and so on, saying, well, in the future we are going to do the same, except that instead of looking for fluids, oil and gas, you are going to look for where to put fluids, carbon dioxide and so on. But basically, the process is similar.
So what are you working on today then in order to bring all of this together?
The point is the following, that capture is an engineering issue, transportation is a non-issue. Geological storage is an issue for the following reasons. First of all, we never know and will know exactly with in great detail what the subsurface is like. Our knowledge of it is based on either seismic interpretation, which is like a CAT scan or an X-ray, or from wells, which is like taking samples from various parts from which we are trying to reconstitute the entire body, geological body. So we deal with a degree of uncertainty there, and we still don't know precisely what are the best places to put carbon dioxide down. Do they have the necessary capacity for the large volumes that we need to put down? Do they have the injectivity that is needed to put the carbon dioxide down at the rate that it's being captured from the power plants? And to give you an example, a power plant emits about 6 to 10 million tons a year, so we need to have that ability to put it down there. But the most important question in the mind of the public, it's not if you have the capacity and injectivity. The public is concerned about the safety and security of storage, and that's one of the most important questions that we need to answer.
Are you working on something to address that?
Well, I focused my work, generally speaking, on site selection and characterization, but keeping in mind that a site that would meet with regulatory approval and hopefully with public acceptance and so on has to meet a whole series of criteria in order to be acceptable and usable and so on and so on. And that was my main area of focus. The subject generally of geological storage, it's quite very diverse and vast. There are issues of modeling, which I know of and I understand. I'm not doing them myself. There are issues of monitoring. There are issues of risk assessment and so on. So I have a broad understanding of all the issues, but I do not work specifically in these particular ones, for example.
Are you still involved on an international level with what is happening with carbon capture and storage?
Yes, I am. To start with, I represent Canada on the technical group of the Carbon Sequestration Leadership Forum, which is an organization of 24 countries, major energy producers and CO2 emitters. It includes countries like United States, China, Brazil, Russia, United Kingdom, Norway, Australia, and so on and so on. Secondly, I've been asked several times to, for example, give advice to various state or local governments in various countries. Just this October, for example, I was on a panel to give advice to Victoria, state of Victoria in Australia, regarding their CCS implementation and things of that sort. So, yes, I am involved.
With the carbon capture and storage, it certainly captured people's attention, but there's also still a lot of controversy about it. What do you have to say about that from your perspective as a scientist?
Well, I understand people's concerns about the safety and security of storage, and I think that we as scientists have to address that. Where I disagree with some environmental NGOs in particular is that they are targeting Canada in general and Alberta in particular for oil sands, when this is a diversion, destruction, when you put the emissions from oil sands in the global context. China is the largest emitter of carbon dioxide, 26% of world emissions today, and growing at a very large pace. China builds every week generating capacity from burning coal equal to 1 gigawatt power. 2 weeks ago, when we had that cold snap in Alberta, that's the largest usage of power in Alberta that we ever had, and that was 1 gigawatt power. China builds every week a new capacity of that magnitude. China builds every year the generating capacity from coal equals to the United Kingdom. United States is the second largest emitter with 25%. So between these two countries, they produce 51% of world emissions. Canada produces 1.6% of world emissions, of which Alberta is a third, which means 0.5%. And if you look at Alberta's emissions, the oil sands are about a tenth of that, because the largest emitters in the province are the coal-fired power plant that generates electricity that we use to keep ourselves warm in the winter and cool in the summer and for everything else we need. Generally, carbon capture and storage, it's about the use of coal for generating electricity and for the and about the use of oil for transportation and about space and water heating, natural gas or oil or coal or things of that sort. It is not about oil sands. So I would like very much to clarify that oil sands are minuscule when you look at the world, and they are a wrong target. I'm not saying that the oil sands should not reduce their emissions and they should not improve their environmental footprint and so on. But what I'm trying to say is targeting the oil sands at the neglect of everything else, it's not the best policy.
Thank you very much, Stefan.
You're welcome.